Our next guest is someone new to the Power Hour. We're always excited to get new people. You've requested this type of information. Dr. Stephen Post. He's a professor at the Case Western University School of Medicine. He teaches a lot about preventative medicine. He deals with dementia. He'll call them something different. I'm sure we'll get to that, which I think is interesting. He has a message. He's written several books. His new book is God and Love on Route 80. I'm totally intrigued. Route 80. Wow. God and Love on Route 80. I would like to hear about this. His message is a simple one, that the act of intentional giving adds to the happiness, health, resilience, creativity, and even longevity of those who, quote, do unto others. Kind of a science behind that. Fascinating. Really glad to meet him. Stephen Post, Dr. Post, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I have to start with Unlimited Love Foundation. You're the president of this. Give us a little back. What is the Unlimited Love Foundation, and how did you get involved?
Way back in 2000, when I was a professor at Case Western School of Medicine, I received the facts of a lifetime from a well-known philanthropist and investor, Sir John Templeton. It said, Stephen, we need to start an institute that studies human kindness, but not just human kindness, also the kind of love that people feel spiritually that inspires them even when they're really not around friends or people they even like. So I faxed back, Sir John, what should we call it? And he faxed, well, the Institute for Research on Unlimited Love, bring all the tools of science to study this experience. I was a little bit nervous about the title, so I faxed Sir John, maybe we should call it the Institute for Creative Altruism. He faxed back, no, I think Unlimited Love up to $8.9 million. And I faxed back, Dan, just what you would do. Sir John, I love that language. It jumps right off the page, and we are off and running.
So you talked to Templeton, and where did he get this? Why was he so motivated for this subject?
Sir John was from Winchester, Tennessee, in Franklin County. He was unbelievably brilliant, a great investor. He was Presbyterian, but they also called him the Tennessee Mystic because he really had this strong feeling about the presence of God, call it God winks or God whispers, just the ways in which our lives are surrounded by this cherishing, loving presence in the universe that oftentimes surprises us with good things in the worst moments. So he'd written a little book called A Pure Unlimited Love. He wrote another book called Agape Love and Eight Religious Traditions. And we had a wonderful conversation for about 20 years around the topic of spirituality, love, kindness, and especially healing.
So you started this institute. You started to apply science to this feeling that kind of Sir Templeton had. Is he? Why is he called Sir John? Is he British? I thought he's from Tennessee. He's not British, is he?
No, he's from Tennessee. But what happened was he eventually moved to the Bahamas because he liked to get away from Wall Street. He had the responsibility to invest the royal family's money in England because he was so good at what he did. He took the endowment of Princeton Theological Seminary in 1975 from a mere $150 million to $1 billion, to the point where it was better endowed than all Protestant seminaries combined in America. So he had a real touch, and he got the royal family out of the red. He did a lot to help Oxford get out of the red. And they knighted him and called him Sir John. And so he became a royal knight.
Wow. Oh, that's fascinating in and of itself. All right. So you're kind of commissioned here by Sir John to apply science to this feeling that he's had all his life and the presence of God or whatever he wanted to describe to you. You were tasked with applying science to that. Would that be accurate, basically?
Yeah, that would be basically accurate, but also all kinds of merely human forms of love, the love that a mother has for a child, how to raise a kind child, that was a big theme, how does kindness and love contribute to people's health, their happiness, even their longevity. So we did all of these basic studies, more than 70 of them at major universities around the country. We were selective. We received applications. We vetted them very carefully. We had large conferences with 1,000 people in one case coming from 40 different countries, researchers, spiritual leaders, practitioners of love who do amazing things. But that was it. I think the core, though, ultimately was what can we understand about these kinds of spiritual transformations where people feel almost invaded by a kind of divine power that makes them loving of everybody without exception, which seems to go beyond the normal human mode of operation.
What did you find as you started to study? You know, what jumped out at you?
Well, there were so many things. I wrote a book that was a bestseller with Broadway Books Random House in 2008, and that was called Why Good Things Happen to Good People. Again, how to live a happier, healthier, longer life through the simple act of giving. There were so many studies in there that were powerful, but among others, for example, we discovered, well, actually, when I came to Stony Brook, which was 2008, I'm at Stony Brook Medical School now, United Health, the managed care system, got in touch with me, and they wanted to know, is it really true that it's good to be good, that it's good for the giver to be good? So at the beginning of 2010, we conducted a national survey, Dan, of 5,000 adult Americans. This is a random survey. And we asked them, did you volunteer in 2009? Turns out 41% of Americans had volunteered. How much? About 100 hours a year. So just break it down. You might want to say a couple of hours a week. Not a whole lot, but enough. And then we asked them, how did this make you feel? 97% said, makes me feel happier. 88% said, makes me feel more resilient. I'm better with disappointments and losses. People said 68% makes me feel physically healthier, kind of more energized. It goes on and on and on. They even said it made them feel that their friendships were deeper. It helped them with sleeping, and it made them feel that life was more meaningful. So when you look at it, it really is good to be good. If you can get yourself into that mode of following the golden rule, do unto others, it's great for the people around you, but you know, it's a great option for you. Although we did a paper on widows and widowers, and we found out that they got through grief and bereavement quicker and for a more enduring way if they could self-report that they were helping people in their communities. I gave a talk at this New York Society of Widows and Widowers. I thought it went pretty well. At the end, there was a guy frantically waving his hands, and he said, I don't care what you say, buddy. I don't do nothing for nothing. So not everybody believes this because they think you only get benefits if there's a payback, a tit-for-tat type thing. But even without that, there was still a lot of internal benefits.
Was this in New York? Sounds like a New York accent or a Jersey accent or something.
It was New York. Yeah, it was at the Marriott Hotel in downtown. And I realized, see, I'm a Clevelander, so I realized at that point, you know, I'm not in Cleveland anymore.
Yeah, New York.
No offense.
New York aborts born babies, so we got to excuse them a little bit. They're a little off the rocker. Let me ask you why. Well, two things jump out what you just said to me. That study is profound. Two things. Why? One, why didn't we hear about that? Why didn't the media latch onto that? Maybe they did. Maybe I just missed it. I don't know. This is the first time I'm hearing. That's a profound study. Two, why do you think those results? What is the reason? What is the connection between happiness and helping other people?
Well, why this doesn't get enough play? Well, I actually got on a lot of news shows. You know, I even did an episode of The Daily Show when John Oliver came out. He was completely cynical. He came out to Stony Brook and he interviewed me in the dirtiest pathology lab in the building. But even with John Oliver, I finally got through to him and he began to believe that it's good to be good. So there was some attention. But the bottom line is that you know, we know scientifically when people are just focused on how they can help others, even if they're not acting, just focused mentally and attitudinally and emotionally, it's beneficial. It actually shuts off the neurological networks that are associated with bitterness, hostility, rumination, and all these classic negative destructive emotions that leave your stress response turned on sometimes for years and years and years, and ultimately is a cause of vascular disease, slows wound healing, and even causes hippocampal atrophy, which is a cause of Alzheimer's disease. And so if your stress hormones are up for a moment, it's good. Fight or flight, you get away from the snake. But if you're in these zones of negative emotions year after year, it's very bad. And when you just put your mind on helping others, it turns off those networks. You get into a space of tranquility, peace, and as St. Paul said, God loves a cheerful giver. It's better to give than to receive.
So is this like relation to especially elderly people, maybe widows, widowers? They get a pet and they feel better because they have a pet to worry about, because they're concerned, they're outside themselves, they're concerned about taking care of this pet. It kind of has the same effect. Would that be similar?
Oh, yeah. We did a study on older adults and dogs, and it has a very solid health benefit. It actually lowers depression considerably, probably cuts it down about 70%.
70%?
And also gives them, more robustness.
Wow.
Well, it's the isolation. I mean, growing old is not for sissies. You're losing loved ones. You're probably more isolated. It's not just about Meals on Wheels getting things. It's about giving things. And so there are now 8 studies, several of which we funded, which are large studies at University of Michigan, Stanford, you name it. And basically older adults, if they say between ages 60 and 80 or 65 and 90, the ones who are high quartile in helping others, just getting out and doing things for people, volunteering, helping in the community, they have much better mental health, and they are outliving the low quartile helpers by about 2 years. So that's pretty cool. And it's all because they're into this space of giving, and it renews their sense of meaning. Even in assisted living centers nowadays, after all these studies, there are large wings where older adults are, you know, they're knitting, they're crocheting, they're weaving baskets, they're putting labels on shirts for the local walkathon, and they're involved helping others because it's good for them. It's as good for them as it is for the people they're helping.
You mentioned earlier about how to raise kind children. Okay, we all want kind children. How do we raise them?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of good research going on, because I'll tell you, Dan, to me, that's the billion-dollar question. Because, look, if you can, one of our studies that went way back to 1929 to the Bay Area in San Francisco, where Berkeley faculty in psychology took 300 12-year-olds from the Bay Area, and they asked them, what floats your boat? What motivates you? About 100 of the 300 said, I want to use my gifts to help others. And then they followed these kids over the course of their lifetime. Every 10 years, they looked at their psychological profile. They gave them surveys. They looked at them emotionally. They looked at their physical illnesses, their medical records. It turns out that 100 over the course of their lifetime was protected from many stress-related illnesses, including asthma, diabetes, vascular disease. And even now, so there are only about 45 of them still living, and they're sort of about 98, 99-ish in age. Two-thirds of the ones who are still alive today come from the one-third who, as 12-year-old, said, I want to use my talents to help others. So somehow or another, I mean, there are exceptions. Great young people have tragic accidents and so forth. But as a generalization, if you can get your kids into kindness early in life, it will shine a protective halo that will follow them their whole life long. Now, the question is how to do it. That's what you're asking as well, right?
Yeah, sure. I'm fascinated. I mean, this is great. Yeah.
Well, there is a way to do it. So there's a wonderful set of studies by Tom Lincona But there are many others who are doing this now, too. And we actually funded, through the Institute, the first major studies on really how to do this. Number one, and this is for everybody listening who has, you know, a couple of young kids and, you know, you're wondering how to manage your family and create kind children in a society that's kind of difficult to manage. First thing to do is you need to have a family mission statement that parents and also the kids agree to. It's usually just seven or eight words. Kindness, respect, peace, prayer, whatever it might be. And when you put that, stick it right on your refrigerator with a magnet. And when there's an issue that happens with the kids or even with the parents, instead of people losing their temper, browbeating, just kind of getting out of sorts, you convene the family around your mission statement. And you talk about it respectfully and hopefully with an air of tranquility. You talk about it. You discuss it. And, of course, the mission statements can be modified and improved and edited over time. But families who have those family mission statements have a kind of cultural center. Now, if you're in a religious community, you can bring words there like love thy neighbor as thyself or whatever it might be. But those mission statements right there in the kitchen as a galvanizing center of a family culture clearly are important. The other thing is families should volunteer together. So check it out with your kids. Maybe your kids are 8, 9, and 10. But talk with them about what floats their boat, what in the community excites them. Maybe it's through their church or their synagogue or whatever. Maybe it's just they're really interested in the local hospital. They're interested in the Alzheimer's Association. But just get your whole family. Maybe they just want to help rake leaves in the neighborhood for people who are destitute and don't have the energy. They're too old to go out and rake their own leaves. That's what I used to do as a kid. But you want to basically get out there with your family and acculturate them, get them used to helping others and feeling the benefits. The other thing is you want to be empathic. So you just want to be very careful about emotional self-regulation. There's a new book out called Screaming, and it points out that even though we don't like to admit it, about 98% of parents scream bloody murder at their kids as they're growing up, at least now and again. And that kind of behavior is not helpful because what we know for sure is that these kids who grow up in these families where you have mission statements, volunteering, and parents who model and demonstrate kindness, if you look at them as they are described, these kids when they're 20, 21, 22 years old, described by their peers in, say, college or whatever, they are described, number one, as kind, and they are described as more creative in that they use their gifts to benefit the people around them. They're better on teams. And the third thing, which is, I think, very interesting, is that they are able to sustain friendships on a more long-term basis.
I was just sitting here listening to you. I got my pen. I wrote down everything you said. But I have two small children, and I'm just kind of putting up what you say and imagining how it work with them. And I think this would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. The person who needs the most training on this would be me, then me and my wife, not our children. Basically, my wife and I need to understand this process. Would you agree there? We need to be the driver force here.
Oh, yeah, Dan. So it's us parents that make. How old are your kids?
7 or 8 and 5.
Yeah, so those are good ages, you know, and you want to start this about now, and you want to engage the kids and just draw up that list of 5 or 6 kind of core defining values. You know, this is our family, and this is how we live, and just put them down and start those conversations. That's the way to go. But ultimately, also what happens in the first, say, 2 years of life with toddlers is important. There's a wonderful guy, Paul Bloom, at Yale, who did a puppet show for about 350 1-year-old to 1.5-year-old toddlers. You got three puppets. Puppet one climbs up an incline, can't get up to the plateau up above, but then falls down in frustration. Scene two. Same puppet goes up. Another puppet follows behind and kind of pushes that puppet up on the plateau. And that's the Good Samaritan puppet. And then thirdly, there's a sort of a mean Jack puppet who follows both of them up and then just throws both down on the ground. So afterwards, independently of one another, so there's no group think, they take these toddlers and they put them in front of the three puppets. Now, the puppets are all different. There's a yellow one, a green one, a purple one. They're all different sizes. They're all just designed differently. 90% of the toddlers will reach out, probably touch, and certainly gaze at the second puppet, the Good Samaritan puppet. So within us, at an early age, is this sense of empathy and kindness. But the question is, what buttons do we push? And that's really important, because if we respond to our kids with kindness and empathy, if we soothe them emotionally, if we are there with them to provide a kind of compassionate response to the challenges they face in life, we're pushing the right buttons, and they will maintain those kinds of capacities. But the Harvard study that was done 2 years ago does show, Dan, I'm sorry to say this, that most parents in America want to raise kind children, a majority, maybe about two-thirds, which is shocking because you wouldn't necessarily know that from the media. But at about age 12 or 13, they shift their values from kindness to success. That's why you got parents paying off the crew coaches and the sailing coaches at USC and Yale and these places just to get their kids into school. I mean, something happens that goes wrong.
Well, there's the music. We got one break, and then we'll be back with Dr. Post. I'm fascinated. I didn't know that much about you before you coming on, Dr. Post, and I'm so glad I've met you. This is very interesting. We'll explore more on the other side. Unlimited Love Foundation, unlimitedlove.org, and, Dr. Post, and your book. I got to ask you about your book, God and Love on Route 80.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Hour, and I wanted to let you know about the Mastering Vaccine Information Bootcamp from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, an 8-week online intensive training course that covers herd immunity and the truth about what safe and effective really means. Most importantly, you will learn key concepts to stand your ground. The course information coupled with the language training is what makes this course both unique and powerful. Open enrollment is from September 26th through October 1st. Sign up by visiting MasteringVaccineInfo.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 311, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you're one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM Sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
I'm really jazzed with what's happening over the Power Mall. We've made a big commitment to you guys and being better service, and obviously you guys have appreciated because you've responded, orders are up, and that's what we need. And really, you need the products and the things that we offer. So thank you so much for your purchases, your donations, your prayers, your energy. We really appreciate it, and I hope you appreciate what we've done. So the Power Mall, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. I want to let you know, there's a lot of great products there. If you've never ordered or spent a while, we're at an extra incentive for new customers. We've got a lot of new customers, a lot of new listeners are coming on board, and we love that. Flash sale today. Dr. Group. Now, the Global Healing Center is a little outside of Houston, and they're in about 3 feet of water. You know, take a yardstick, and you can imagine 3 feet of water, 3 feet of rain in a little over 24 hours, and you can imagine what that would do. So we're doing he was going to be on next week. He just can't now because of everything he's dealing with. We're doing a flash sale. Any purchase at the Power Mall, anything, you can buy anything at the Power Mall, and then you can buy any of the Global Healing Center products for 15% off. Now, we can't even put that kind of type of discount online because we're restricted by our agreements with them. We can't advertise that on the internet. We're doing it just on the show, and you have to call to get it. 877-817-9829. Of course, all the Sherry Rogers, the detox cocktail, the phosphatidylcholine, extremely important products. And if you listen to the interview, her interview a couple days ago, extremely important. The ones that we've done in the past, alpha lipoic acid R, the grown by nature vitamin E, all the many other great products, Oregadent. I want to mention that from North American Herbal Spice with your teeth and children's teeth, what have you. Cold Storm, has been a good new product that we're offering. Check that out. The detox foot pads, of course, from, Dr. Group, and a silver spray and a super silver accessory kit. Have you ever sprayed super silver up your nose? You know, I just do it the old fashioned way, but there's a kit that actually can help you for sinus problems and things like that. And it works really well. So check that out at the Power Mall, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. Thank you so much for your purchases, your donations again, and everything. So getting back to our guest, Dr. Stephen Post. His websites are Stephen with a PH, StephenGPost.com or UnlimitedLoveInstitute.org. I think I got that wrong before. UnlimitedLoveInstitute.org. So check that out and to learn more. Fascinating subjects. I was talking to you during the break, and I'm going to ask this on air because I think everyone may benefit from this. You know, I look back on my children and, you know, different times of my life, stressful, what have you. You know, I've lost it on my children. Sure, I'm sure everybody has. Maybe some of these things we haven't approached like ideally like I'd want to or like you're describing. So is there, you know, especially for young children or maybe even older children, can we undo the damage that we've done? How do we keep from passing on, you know, all our nonsense to our children? Maybe that's a better question.
Well, no parent is really scream-free. This incredible study I mentioned indicates about 98% of parents will fess up and say, you know, I really lost it with my young kids, and I screamed bloody murder at them, and it was abusive. So that's the best of us.
And 2%, and the other 2% are lying? And the other 2% are lying?
Yeah. I would say probably, probably the case. You know, I would agree. So the thing is that this is not, it's not determinative in any sort of a hard sense. Sure, you're pushing the wrong buttons. And if this is extreme, if a child is really abused verbally and emotionally, especially in those very early years, it's pushing the wrong button. It actually inhibits or suppresses their natural empathic qualities. And it's likely that as they look back on their lives, and we know this from 3 or 4 studies, if they say, well, you know, my life as a young kid was so bad, it's very predictive of physical and mental illnesses in midlife. That's unquestionably the case. But the point is that obviously in most situations, this is not extreme, and you just want to change your behavior. You know, wake up today and practice a pattern of kindness. It doesn't mean, so the types of parenting that the literature has defined, there's what's called authoritarian. That's when you're really browbeating, really screaming, really yelling. That's very destructive. On the other hand, something that's pure permissive on the other side of the spectrum, that's equally bad. That's why you get people who are just doing crazy things all the time and don't have any sense of true north in their lives. But authoritative parenting is what you want. And you can get into that mindset. You know, in my I lost it with my kids a number of times. And then we got a copy of Norman Rockwell's iconic The Golden Rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We actually put it up over the fireplace. And when things would go wrong, when, you know, my daughter would say, well, I hate that person, or my son would do something not so great, like spit on a neighbor. Okay, these things do happen with young kids. Instead of getting upset overly, we would just bring everybody together around our mission statement, which became Rockwell's Golden Rule, and we talk it out, and that became very effective. And it helped my wife and I as parents, because we didn't really want to scream. We didn't need to anymore, because we could talk these things through. Also, the science says that if you have good non-parent mentors, you know, a good neighbor who's very kind. I had one growing up as a kid, Mr. Muller, who was just a wonderful role model.
And, his name wasn't Robert. His name wasn't Robert, was it? His name wasn't Robert, was it?
No. It was Carl Muller, not Robert. Not Robert. Oh, no.
I'm sorry, I just couldn't resist. I didn't mean to get you off track.
I'm gonna stay away from that one. You know, but if you marry an empathic person who's demonstrating kindness, that can help. If you get involved in a good school that really teaches kindness and makes it part of the curriculum, if you're doing work with your spiritual community or whatever, I mean, you can overcome these adversities, because no parents are perfect. But nevertheless, parents should make every effort to focus their goal on raising a kind child, and not just a child who loves, you know, simply the near and dear, or people who are most like them and hates everybody else. I mean, you want to have children come into this world, and you want to teach them to have a sense of a shared humanity, to love people of every kind of background, so we get away from some of this incredible division and violence that is plaguing the world.
So let's talk about this mission statement. So if I would sit down with my family or our listeners, they sit down with their family, and you mentioned words before, like kindness. Or I mean, are you saying that you just list some words, or you actually have my, our mission statement is to spread kindness throughout the world, or our mission statement is to do unto others as we would have them do unto us?
Yeah.
I mean, how would you phrase this? What would be a good mission statement?
It varies a lot, but many families, and some counselors help with this too, but families will sit down, and the goal is, okay, let's put down six words that we want to be the center of our family and we want to be remembered for. And so those words can just be listed, in a row. Kindness, respect, forgiveness, gratitude, maybe integrity, helping others. That's all you really need. Now, in my family, we had this phrase, in addition to individual words, we rise by lifting others. And that became a kind of a motto. And then later on, you know, as the kids got older, we sort of, you know, we modified, you can edit these things, but it became in the giving of self lies the discovery of a deeper self. So as the kids matured, you know, it became a little more complex. But if you can create that, because see the cult, what you're competing with, Dan, and everybody out there listening to you, I mean, raising kids in today's society is hell. I mean, you know, are they just locked up into violent video games? Are they're watching the most horrible role modeling 24 hours a day through some media, not others, of course. You can go to a movie. I mean, all the Hollywood folks are so concerned about violence, but it's hard to go to a movie and not just see, you know, a smattering of blood for an hour and a half. So, I mean, we really need to just help people get recentered and form communities of kindness, and that will set them in the right path over the entire course of their lives. They truly will live. You know, this is a generalization. Like I say, someone might be 20 or 18 or 30 and they'll get a terminal diagnosis of cancer or whatever. But on the whole, they will live happier, healthier, more resilient lives. They'll be able to bounce back from difficulties, longer lives, and it's all positive. So this is why, you know, that passage, 'tis better to give than to receive. Be a cheerful giver. Don't count tit for tat. Just pay it forward. Those things really do matter. And of course, when you get to the end of your life, and we've actually done studies on this, people in all cultures do a kind of self-assessment. They sort of tend to look back on their lives and they're asking themselves, did I live a kind life? Did I contribute to others or not? And that'll kind of color your experience even as you get near death.
Now, we have a lot of grandparents listening, or a lot of parents, you know, their children are grown, what have you, and they might be listening to you right now and thinking, oh my God, I've failed as a parent, or oh wow, I wish I would have known this then. What can older, you know, parents of older children or grandparents, what can they do now to help instill kind of what you're talking about?
Well, I think grandparents are really important. And when I go to places like, you know, the Chautauqua institutions where you have these old Victorian houses with the three stories. So the grandparents, it was a three-generational family. The role of grandparents in all traditional societies is to pass the torch of wisdom. They're the ones who can say things to their grandchildren that a lot of times, you know, parents can't. Like my mother could say things to my daughter that I couldn't, you know. I mean, my daughter was kind of in a state of constant rebellion at times, but grandma could get through to her. So on these basic values, grandparents are really important. And I was at a restaurant with an old friend of mine who I went to high school with just a couple of years ago. And it was a French restaurant. And there were two young kids. They were like 5, 7 years old. For the whole meal, they were locked on to their iPads, right? And you had grandma and grandpa there and the parents. And the parents and the grandparents were having this conversation, but the kids were completely locked out of it because they were getting their wisdom, you know, from the latest software or from the latest website, and heaven knows what that might be. So that intergenerational flow is so important. And my friend, whose name was Nick, he'd actually been an ambassador in Europe for a while, he whispered in my ear, he said, "Stephen, is this the end of civilization? So you want to get the grandparents and the kids together. You want to use that relationship. Passing the torch is the most important thing." And, you know, America, so in these international happiness scales that come out of the University of Liverpool, we're like right now in the low 30s worldwide, but places like Mozambique, they're in the top 5 because they have roles. Everybody has social roles. The grandparents are respected. They're part of the culture.
Let me pause right here because you said something. As soon as you said it, my mind just went, "Oh my gosh!" And what you're saying now, let me direct this conversation to maybe a different area than you're going to end up, because I think this is critical. Okay, you just said something about this dinner date with the grandparents, the parents, and the children, and you said that the children were locked out of the conversation. They're locked out of the interaction, so they were getting their wisdom from some other source. When you said that, it's like, oh my gosh, what we've seen, we can just watch TV, and the young people, they are not getting the values of their parents and certainly not their grandparents. They are not, in general, our culture is not passing down the values of our grandparents to our grandchildren. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And I went to college with Steve Jobs, Reed College, Portland, Oregon. He slept on my floor. And he went on in life and he invented all those white plastic devices that are in everybody's living room and bedroom right now. But let me tell you, he never let his kids get hooked on that stuff. He kept them off that until they were in their mid-teens. And he did that because he knew that the secret to raising a child of character and virtue was that interaction. So we need to be very careful about the world we live in and what we allow to instruct and shape and form the minds and hearts of our kids.
Okay, hold on. Now you're telling me Steve Jobs slept on your floor. What was that like? What was it like?
College.
What was it like knowing Steve Jobs back then?
Well, he was only there for, he was enrolled for 6 months and then he dropped out, but he stayed around for another year. And because that was the hippie era and you could still go to class. So there was, for example, there was a class, called Alchemy 101, which was a combination of medieval science and quantum theory and physics. everybody there at that time took a course in calligraphy, which is why Apple has such beautiful script compared to the alternatives. And the reason it's called Apple is because he used to disappear on the weekends from like literally Thursday to Monday. There were no apple picking machines back then, but there's a lot of orchards about an hour north of Portland, Oregon. And he would just go there and he would be an apple picker and he would come back. And that's why Apple's Apple. But he was an intense guy. But I thought he was brilliant. And in fact, he was so brilliant that it was hard for him to be in school. So the last time I saw him, he'd left for India to be in a Zen monastery. But then 11 years ago, I have a friend, Todd Rulon Miller, who owns a business in the Silicon Valley. We went to the same high school in New Hampshire. So I said, "Todd, can you give me Steve Jobs' email?" Which he did. It was just steve@apple.com. Can you believe that? So I emailed him.
Hilarious.
And I said, do you remember me? I used to let you sleep on my floor in the rain. And he remembered me. We had a little correspondence back and forth.
Did you
but
get any sense?
His own kids.
It sounds like maybe you didn't know him really well later, but did you get the sense, or maybe you put together, I don't know, that he regretted the influence that his products had attained? The influence on culture and society. Maybe he regretted that. Maybe that's why he retreated to India. I don't know. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just, you know.
Well, I think he saw great possibilities in technology. but he also really emphasized making connections. When he spoke publicly, I didn't know him in his adult life, but when he spoke publicly, he really could connect with people. He could read an audience. He had a lot of empathic depth. So he knew the importance of teaching people how to communicate in a meaningful way and not just stay locked and hidden behind these screens. You know, by the way, even our residents in hospitals now, their ratio of screen time to patient interaction is on average across the country 4 to 1. They're spending 4 hours on these medical records, sitting behind screens, thinking, gosh, I didn't know I trained for a desk job. And the thing that means something to them, which is to communicate compassionately with their patients and to really be there, and they're thrilled by those possibilities, that's being removed because they're just stuck behind these damn computers.
We talk about the public education system. We've had many guests on talk. You know, I didn't bring you on to talk about this. I don't know. But it just made me start to think about school and the connection of school and what they're getting and the values. Somewhere we are not getting the value. That's really what we want, right? As a grandparent, I'm not a grandparent, but I can only imagine on my deathbed, old age, what have you, my biggest concern or regret or accomplishment, I will look at my grandchildren, whatever, and I'll think, oh, I've passed on something of value to them. Oh, they are people of ingenuity that they can continue on. I mean, that would be my biggest concern at that point. But I just don't see that. I see a failing of culture, and it's just very alarming.
It is very alarming. And, you know, the thing is, when you're getting up there in age and, you know, the end is near and you look back on your life and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I wish I'd done it differently. I wish I'd spent more time with my kids and raised them a little differently. The problem is you can't get it back. And it's very frustrating for people. So I totally agree. And that's, you know, I'm of an age where I worry about that, too. I really invest a lot in my kids. I don't have any grandchildren. You know, when I think about the educational system, there's a lot of poor role modeling. There's some good role modeling. I just feel as though we need to educate for kindness. I mean, in a lot of places around the country now, even in the second, third grade, you know, they're doing sort of meditation. It's actually a way of almost reintroducing prayer into the schools, but you've got to watch that church-state separation stuff. Now, when I was a kid, I prayed in school, and I think personally that made all the difference in the world. Just taking that, you know, 4 or 5 minutes early in the morning with all your friends gathered around, sometimes holding hands, and just a little improvised prayer. That made a difference. And I think, you know, if you look at it, you know, when prayer left the schools, a lot of bad things started to happen. That's just my opinion. I'm not trying to inflict.
Well,
that's
a fact. If you talk about the marker, I mean, that's just a fact. You know, the early 60s, that's a fact. It went from Leave It to Beaver to Woodstock in about 7 years. We don't have to argue about
Absolutely.
That. But I never thought about what you just said about prayer. You know, my parents, they prayed in school and they talked about that and they can even remember the time that it was taken away. My uncle, he talks about that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't put together with what you just said there, the community, the connectedness, that when you're together, the common values, all these things, the roles. You mentioned earlier about Mozambique. Everybody has a role, the parents, the grandparents, men, women, whatever, the roles, the definitions of roles, the unity and the connectedness in society then is built on those things. Okay, when we are hearing words like social justice, diversity, gender fluidity, gender identity, you know, all these words, I'm not trying to put, again, words in your mouth, but what you're telling me, I'm listening to you, that all those things are destructive of concrete values and of a good, firm, growing, constructive society. That's kind of what I'm getting from you. Am I wrong?
We need to get back to basic values. We need to get back to the essential universal laws of life. Sir John Templeton wrote a book called The Essential Laws of Life. Gratitude, kindness, forgiveness, wisdom, perseverance, creativity, love, service. We need to get back to the basic values. And that includes, by the way, kids who know how to say please, thank you, and you're welcome. You'll see in my book, God and Love on Route 80, my grandfather, Edwin of Maine Post, married a woman named Emily, who was well known for etiquette. And she just believed that everybody has a right to these basic values. So what I think has happened in many respects is that we've been diverted from the core values that make a life and that make a life successful, because it's all about a flourishing life, not just for self, but for others. And instead, you hear all of this alternative stuff and you know, oftentimes from people who are not particularly good role models themselves. So I am concerned about getting back to basics, and we kind of need a new Emily Post. And we need to get back to those things, because without it, our society's just falling apart. And you know, every day the news is worse.
There's the music. This has really crept up on me. We're at the end of our time. This has flown by. I hope that you come on again soon, Stephen. I would love to talk more with you. I didn't even mention your book, God and Love on Route 80. We mentioned it, didn't get into it. Why Good Things Happen to Good People. Your website, StephenGPost.com, and UnlimitedLoveInstitute.org. I think these concepts and these ideas are just... I've had a very fascinating time getting to meet you, Stephen. It's been an absolute pleasure. We got about probably 15 seconds. Last thought is yours.
Well, thanks, Dan. Real simple, back to basics. In the giving of self lies the discovery of a deeper and more creative and more resilient and happier and healthier self. Amen.
Fantastic. God bless you. God keep you in what you're doing. And everybody there, have a good, great weekend. We'll see you in a couple days. And remember who you are. And it's Constitution Week. Take care.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using carnivora, because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit